Explore Chicago's culinary side with Chicago Tribune's Food and Dining Newsletter. Sign up today, chicagotribune.com/newsletters, and live deliciously. Sounds great, doesn't it? Live deliciously. You were hungry already. Now you're even more hungry.
Yeah. It's been a busy day. I had to break out my dance moves on Windy City Live earlier.
Hello.
Yeah.
How'd that go?
I think I strained something.
You're pulling back muscle.
Yeah. It was not one of the more dignified presentations I've ever had on television. But here's a man who's always dignified on television, Mr. Brett Baer from the Fox News Channel. Let's see how I did that transition? That was
very smooth.
Yeah, you can use that in your little show later. Hey, I want to talk to you right off the top here. By the way, congratulations on your new book. Which is flying off the internet, off the shelves of the internet. Amazon can't get the drones out to the houses fast enough. 3 days in January, right? Is the name of the book. It's about it is about those last days, and we're coming up on it right here. Tomorrow would be three days in January, the last days of the Eisenhower administration and the speech, his final speech to the nation, and how important. What that caveat was an inflection point, a pivot point in American history, and it feels very much like we're on one right now. So I'll take you right to the headline today, which is Trump tweeting about NATO, saying that it was designed decades ago and is now obsolete. That's getting some pushback around the world and also on Capitol Hill.
It is. You're right. It was 56 years ago tomorrow. That's right, for that farewell speech by Eisenhower to Kennedy. The NATO thing is raising some eyebrows because of that phrase, obsolete. Now, you know, his defense secretary nominee and his State Department secretary of state nominee, Rex Tillerson and General James Mattis, both said that NATO was crucial to security throughout Europe, but that there are problems and it has to be restructured, and that the contributing countries have to step up and not just provide paper armies. In other words, say they're going to do something and not go to the table, or have to provide more money, because it's the U.S. often, all of these nominees said, and testimony in their confirmation hearings, that foots the bill for the entire NATO defense operation. Now, President-elect Trump says it differently. You know, same message, but he uses the word obsolete. Well, that has sent off alarm bells all over Europe, and specifically with Germany, that's very concerned about the future.
Yeah. Yeah, and it also plays right into the narrative that Donald Trump wishes to push back very, very hard on, that he is somehow in the pocket of Vladimir Putin or the Russians, and you know, there's all of this circumstantial things around him, and he pushes back very, very hard, which, you know, as you know, anybody who's ever raised a child, the harder they push back, the more guilty they appear to be. And he may not be at all, I want to be fair here, he may not be at all in the pocket of Vladimir Putin, and all of that other stuff, you know, could be, you know, made out of whole cloth. I mean, there could be nothing. But the reality is that there's a bit of a public relations war, it seems, that maybe the president-elect does not seem like he is willing to explain things. I think he's one of those adherents to the notion, if you're explaining, you're losing. And I think that you know, maybe at this point he needs to be a little bit more explicit than 140 characters.
Yeah, I mean, there is not a lot of nuance when you have 140 characters on Twitter, and a lot of these things require that kind of deft touch. This is kind of cut and dry. It's a meat cleaver to some of these issues. And I think that his nominees and the people who are advising him are phrasing it a lot more, or a lot closer to where he eventually will be.
Shouldn't he be on the same page, though?
Who controls the media message. He's somebody who knows how to, you know, dominate the media cycle. And he's dominating it. And he's every tweet he makes, it seems like a Sting song. Every tweet he makes, every breath
Step
he takes,
easy,
watching you.
Right.
I think it just gets a lot of attention, and I don't know if he's going to govern like that, but he could.
Brett, let me also ask you about the overhaul of the federal health care policy. And Trump is, first of all, when he talked about that on the campaign trail, the repeal and replace of Obamacare, it seemed to me like it might just be a campaign promise because we saw how difficult it is and how many details there are involved and how much you have to figure out in order to make an effective policy and how can you make it better. It's not that easy. But it now appears that his people are saying, we have the votes. We're going to move in unison. We're going to expect Republicans to move quickly with this and have a replacement for Obamacare in place, potentially after 100 days or not long after that. Is that possible from what you know of what might be in the plan? Because we haven't seen the details. Is there something here that we should believe in is coming our way that'll be better?
Yeah, I think we have to see what they're talking about. I mean, there are a number of plans up there. Senator Rand Paul has a plan. Other folks have a plan that incorporates all of the different Republican elements, and that is expanding the catastrophic insurance, crossing state lines, so there's competition. And there are questions with all of these things. He does not deal in a lot of specifics, and he says he wants to wait until his HHS secretary, Tom Price, is in place. His hearing starts this week. And they're having a goal. Meanwhile, Speaker Ryan's talking about giving everybody some time to get around one replacement. It doesn't sound like the president-elect and his people are good with that. They want insurance for everybody, and they want it now. Mm-hmm. Now, I just don't know how you get from point A to point B, but we're going to press them and see if we can get some details.
Because that's the part you need to know, right? What are the details? Before, that was the problem. We didn't get to fully analyze the details of the plan initially, and then there were some problems with that.
Let's talk White House for just a second here, because you worked in the White House for a number of years as a reporter. There's this talk of moving the White House press briefings, at least, out of the West Wing and over to the Executive Office Building and to mm-hmm. a larger place where there could be a couple hundred people. And Sean Spicer was on earlier today, mm-hmm. the incoming press secretary, talking to at least CBS News about this and saying, listen, we want to do this because, you saw in the press conference last week how people are, they want to cover him and they're very excited about it. So we'd like to have more people and they'd like to extend out to get away from mainstream media and also have talk show hosts and bloggers and other people, internet types. I know that, and by the way, and this is not a new concept because Barack Obama did this in 2008, 2009 also, where they extended out and they wanted internet reporters on as opposed, in the press corps to get credentialed. So, I mean, this is a thing, but it seems to me that what they're really going for here is what happened last week in the press conferences is you did have people in the press corps and in that room, which not even everybody in that room was in the press corps, at Trump's press conference last Wednesday, shouting down other reporters. And it seems to me what he's going for there is to have that sort of that raucous crowd effect at the press conferences. I don't know that's how I want democracy to go.
Maybe, but I think they want just more people covering it. They want to open it up to not, there are 49 seats, I think there are in the press room now. And that's, by the way, built over the old swimming pool in the White House. And it's a pretty small room if you've ever been in there. It's not
it's not that close, is it?
No.
Yeah.
It's very, very tight, and they want to expand it to have hundreds of people. And going beyond the so-called media elite. And the issue is twofold. One, having been in the White House press corps, it is a prestigious thing, in part because you get a position to ask a question in the press briefing room, but you have access to mid-level press officials, and you can see VIPs coming through the gate, and you can kind of talk to them, and there's like this, that's part of the thing. If the idea is not just putting the press conferences over there, I mean the news conferences, but also moving the press over to the EEOB, that I think will be pushed back pretty hard by the White House Correspondents Association.
Right, which runs that room. Yeah,
but is it a slam on mainstream media? Is that what he's trying to do here in your view?
Yeah.
Just sort of say, hey,
he's trying
not you 60 elite media types are in charge. I'm going to make everybody sort of have a seat at the table.
Exactly. And I don't know if it's creating the raucous thing. I think that that room where they held that news conference, they had people that were working for Trump, you know, who were actually cheering answers. And I don't know that that's the environment that they're going for. But again, I don't know. They're just starting to lay this out. They're saying that there's going to be access and there are going to be news briefings. But, you know, there's a concern that they're going to dial it back and pull the press out of the White House proper.
Well, it's going to be something. Ooh. Yeah, so it's a brave new world. It's a brave new world, which why I think it's that just it's as important as it has ever been to buy Brett's book, Three Days in January, because it tells you about another transitional moment. So this is the moment.
This book starts with President-elect Kennedy meeting President Eisenhower, and it ends with President-elect Trump meeting President Obama. This handover that we're looking at there at 1960-1961 is as relevant today as it was back then. It was a dangerous time, and what Eisenhower planned and what he warned Kennedy about could be passed on today.
Thank you, Brett. Appreciate it.
Thanks,
sir.
Brett.
Thank you.
All right, Brett Baer, Fox News Channel. See him tonight at 5 o'clock in Chicago on Special Report, or as we like to say here, DVR it
and
watch
it later.
After 7 o'clock.
Yes.
But don't tell Justin I said that.